Well, thank you, Spirit Voice, for that beautiful, inspiring song. Thank you, Greg. Wow. You know, this election is not about the candidates. It's about you. It's more about you than it is about anybody else. And it's more about what kind of America you want to live in. I know that many of you have already voted, and some of you are yet to. Even if you don't vote, that says something about you too, and about America. So if you choose to vote for me as President of the United States, actually, I've signed Hillary and Donald up to Gary's class. No one and nothing against you, you know? I think they could use that. Well, there were a group of Native Americans that were concerned with winter coming up, what kind of winter it was going to be, so they went to their chief and said, "Chief, what kind of winter are we going to have this year? Is it going to be cold or not?" And he said, "Well, he didn't really know, but he thought, I better say something." So he said, "Yeah, I think it's going to be pretty cold, and there's going to be lots of snow, and I think that you better start collecting wood for this winter." Just to make sure, he decided to get on his cell phone and call the Weather Bureau and see what they said, and asked, "Is the winter going to be cold or not?" And the man on the phone said, "Winter's going to be quite cold, actually." So he went back to his tribe, and he said, "It's going to be a quite cold winter, I have found out, and so you need to get out there and collect even more wood." So the next week, he goes back to the weather people on the phone and says, "Are you sure this is going to be a very cold winter?" And the guy on the other end of the line says, "Yeah, it's going to be a very, very cold winter." So he goes back to his people and he says, "I have it on best authority that it's going to be a very, very, very cold winter." And just to make sure, he calls up the Weather Bureau again. He says, "How do you know it's going to be a very, very, very cold winter?" And he says, "Well, the Indians are gathering wood like crazy." So just saying, it's going to be that kind of winter. Many of you know the old Zen saying, before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. And after enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. Or as I have said on occasion, before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. After enlightenment, get somebody else to do it for you. I want to talk about enlightenment with you this morning. But before I do, I want to give you a little test to find out just how enlightened you are today. You know, what is your enlightenment level at this particular stage in your spiritual journey? So I'm going to give you a little test. So let's take this test together. Here are the questions. Can you live without caffeine?
Yes.
Some of you. Can you be cheerful while you ignore your aches and pains?
No.
Can you resist complaining, especially in the next couple of days here? Can you take criticism and blame without resentment?
Sometimes.
Can you conquer tension without medication?
Yes.
Good for you. Can you relax without a cocktail in the evening?
Yes.
Good for you. And can you sleep without the aid of drugs?
Yes.
And finally, are you free from all prejudice? I'm not sure about that one. Well, depending on how you did, if you answered yes to all those questions, then you have reached the enlightenment level of your dog. Or your cat, as the case may be. You know, for years I've wanted to know what chop wood and carry water really meant. And I realized that asking the question shows that you don't have a real understanding of the question or the answer. So I'm not claiming to know the answer to the question this morning, but I want to share my experience with you. There is another similar Buddhist saying that says, it is not what you eat, it is who is doing the eating. Who is it that's doing the eating? That really is the question. So we want to explore this with you this morning. What's the difference anyway? What's the difference between chopping wood and carrying water before enlightenment and chopping wood and carrying water after the experience? The need is the same. The tasks are the same. What's the difference? Every one of us, every day, chops wood and carries water. Yes, you do. Jan, do you get up and brush your teeth in the morning?
Yes.
That's chopping wood and carrying water. Do you have breakfast? Do you walk the dog if you have a dog? Or, as I did this morning, clean up the cat barf at our house? Do you go to work? Do you drive on the freeway? Do you come to church? All of these are the everyday tasks that you and I have every day, and that's chopping wood and carrying water. It's the routine of everyday tasks, and every one of us have those every day of our life together. We do stuff, and when you get home today, there'll be more wood to chop and water to carry. So what difference would enlightenment make in all of that? What difference would enlightenment make in the way you lived your everyday life? Well, the difference as I see it would be this. Who is it that's chopping the wood? And who is it that's carrying the water? Because there's a different you, a different who that shows up from time to time in this whole process. Essentially, the who that is doing all of this stuff is really the key part of this interesting question. Who is chopping water? Who's carrying water? Who's eating? Who's taking out the garbage? Who's coming to church? Who's going to the polls on Tuesday, and who's coming home from the polls on Tuesday? Perhaps this is really the true litmus test of how far along the spiritual path we really are. Not as many have thought how many prayers that we have prayed, or meditations that we have meditated, or gurus that we have gone to, or church services that we have come to. Perhaps the real test can best be understood by, as far as our degree of enlightenment, by how we deal with our everyday tasks, how we deal with the day-in, day-out routine that we have developed over the years. Tasks that we may or may not be particularly enthusiastic about doing, tasks that are there for us, washing the dishes, cleaning the car, visiting the dentist, exercising, whatever it may be. As you think about having to prepare a meal, for example, or go to work, anything that maybe there was a time when you really looked forward to that, but now it's routine. It's something that you're doing every day, day in and day out, and you may not be too enthusiastic about doing it. And you come up with excuses to put the job off. Somebody was saying at the first service, they got to clean their garage out today. And they're not looking forward to that. And they didn't like me for reminding them of that either. We build up resistance. We build up resistance around these things. All sorts of excuses not to go ahead and complete the task. Anybody identify with that here this morning? Okay, I'm talking to the right people. If you allow those excuses to build up, that resistance to build up, the task becomes even more unattractive and more impossible to do. We justify it, and that strengthens our resistance. I know that because I'm an expert in that. I'm an expert in procrastination and putting off things because in my mind I'm starting to think, well, I don't really want to do that today. I'd rather do something else. I'd rather not do anything, as a matter of fact. I don't want to chop any wood today. I don't want to carry any water. And so the resistance builds up, and that is what determines our degree of enlightenment in any given day in our lives. Now, resistance is not something you were born with. It's something that you picked up along the way. Somewhere along the line, you were taught to resist. To resist either was your parents, your relatives, your peer groups, your schooling, or just what you picked up along the way. And so we begin to see that the who is chopping wood, and the who is carrying the water, and the who is eating the food, is not so much a person, but an attitude, a self-image, a self-concept, a sense of who you currently believe you are or are not. And so that may be the litmus test that determines just how far along the spiritual path we are. It's not if we're wearing robes and floating, through the air and being holy. It may be how we're cleaning the cat sand or taking out the garbage or any of the other tasks that we have, as simple a thing as chopping wood and carrying water. That's the litmus test of the liberated soul, it seems to me. And we're going to have to do it. When you get home today, there's more wood to chop and water to carry. So the key is how much resistance is there to that. How much resistance is going on in you to do the things that are coming up for you to do? The more resistance, the more uncomfortable the task may be, the more disconnected you are from who you came here to be, the more disconnected you are to your source. When there is no resistance at all, then the who is left to chop the wood and carry the water is the liberated, enlightened soul. So my question to you this morning is, who is the who is currently chopping your wood and carrying your water? If enlightenment can help us with this, I'm all for it. I don't know about you. I want more of this enlightenment in my life to carry out my daily tasks so that when there is a task that is awesome and incredible and bigger than my daily routine, I'm ready for that one too, because I have created for myself a sense of connection to my source, and I can handle the heavy pail of water and the wood for a very, very, very long and cold winter in my life. So I want to know what to do about that. Contrary to what we may believe, enlightenment is not contingent on having the right teacher or finding the right and perfect guru. I always like to spell guru G-U-R-U. You are your own guru. You've always been your own guru. Even if you've gone to other people, what have the wisest gurus done? They have pointed you back to yourself, to your source within you. If they're worth a grain of salt, they have done that. Contrary to what many believe, enlightenment is not a peak spiritual experience. Enlightenment is not something you get, not something you acquire. You don't need a priest or a rabbi or a shaman or a kahuna to intercede with you on behalf of universal intelligence. You don't need a special technique or posture or meditation practice. You don't need to memorize scripture or chants of any kind. And contrary to what we have perhaps believed, enlightenment is not hard work. It is not hard work. A Zen student goes to a temple and he asks the master in the temple how long it will take him to gain enlightenment if he joins that temple. And the master says, 10 years. And the student says, well, what if I double my efforts and work really hard? How long will it take then? And the master says, 20 years. Because the effort, the struggle, the work that we think it takes to become spiritual beings is no work at all. It's not hard work. That's because enlightenment is not adding something to your life. It's a taking away of something. It's a stripping away of everything you've ever thought was necessary to be a spiritual being, to be the person you came here to be, the self that you are. It's like Michelangelo's Statue of David. We know the story about Michelangelo being asked how he got this statue out of a terrible piece of marble that was rejected by others. And he simply said, well, I chipped away everything that wasn't David, and there it was. You know? And that's where enlightenment comes from. We chip away one day at a time, everything that is not you, not me, not the self that we came here to be. Spiritual enlightenment is the simple discovery of a whole new dimension of yourself that has been hidden in plain sight and that you have not experienced before. So all you need to do is discover who you really are and be it fully. Many of us have sought enlightenment in different places, many different sources. Some of you have even come to this church expecting to find enlightenment, haven't you? I know some of you came here when I started in the church, and you thought you were going to get enlightened by being in my holy presence, didn't you? And I'm sorry to disappoint you, but you didn't find it. And you haven't found it with Gary and Jane either. Before David, chop wood and carry water. After David, chop wood and carry water. Same with Jane and Gary. Before Donald and Hillary, chop wood and carry water. After, we got to do the same thing. So what's going to be the difference? The difference is not going to be them. The difference is going to be how much of you have come to know and feel within yourself. How much of you is there? And the reason for that is you are the one that we have been waiting for all these years. You are the one that carries with you the inspiration, the power, the love, the grace, the intelligence to make great things happen in this world. We've been waiting for you. Where have you been? Well, I've been chopping wood and carrying water. Yes. Two friends were talking, and one said, I once went to a guru and said to him, Master, what do I do to achieve enlightenment? And the master was quiet for a moment and then raised his head and said, I want you to do exactly the opposite of whatever I tell you. And so I didn't. I'm here to tell you this morning that there isn't anyone that is out there that is going to come to your rescue. There isn't anyone up there. There isn't anyone, certainly isn't anyone in Washington that's going to do that. There is no one who is more spiritual than you are on the planet. No one who has greater access to the source than you do. So the good news is there's nothing lacking here in any of you. And there is nothing lacking in this church, nothing lacking in this community. We have all that we need, all the resources. The same spark that is within you was in Jesus and Buddha and Muhammad. Same spirit. But I have some bad news for you this morning, too, and that is that there's nothing special about you. And there's nothing special about Unity Spiritual Center. That means that no one here has any exclusive right or claim to enlightenment or to spirituality. None of us have more light than anyone else. No church has more light than anyone else. No one. But isn't that actually good news? Now that I think about it? That's the good news. It's all good. Some of us may have, as Jesus said, covered our light over in a bushel and kept it from each other and from ourselves, hiding it. But we can see that the possibility is always there and always within us. And Jesus has given us a very powerful clue on the road to enlightenment when he gave us his greatest, all-time great commandment. And do you know what that one is? Cheer up already. Actually, he didn't quite say that. What he said was, be of good cheer, for I have overcome the world. And you can overcome your world too. You can overcome the burden of too much water and too much wood to carry and chop. Now, I know that in my own life, cheering up is a constant challenge and opportunity. And especially for the last 3 or 4 years, I've really had to work at that every day, gauging my own spiritual enlightenment as I go along. The more cheerful I know, the more cheerful and contented and satisfied I'm feeling, the more I'm aware of my connection to my source And so I ask myself a question that you may want to ask yourself this morning. How am I feeling most of the time? When you wake up in the morning, you say, good morning, God. Or do you say, good God, morning? Yeah. If your answer is that you're feeling anxious, you're feeling worried, you're feeling overwrought, you're feeling hurt, you're feeling depressed, then you need a good cheering up. And there may be people around who will try to cheer you, and sometimes that turns you off even more when they try to be cheery with you. What it could mean is that you have allowed your personal energy to become contaminated with the circumstances and the energies around you. But when you're spiritually connected, you are not looking for occasions to be offended, you are not looking for occasions to be neglected or abandoned or judged in some way. You're in a state of grace in which you know that you're connected to the source. So I tend to ask myself that every morning, David, how are you truly feeling this morning? And if my answer is not so hot or upset, I go to my quiet place. I go to that quiet place where I can plug into my spiritual source. And a state of cheerfulness is what I am aiming for. And I generally always find it there. Each teacher that has been significant in my life has demonstrated that wondrous quality of being able to cheer up, to laugh, to take life lightly, and to be silly and giddy. And it's very, very key and important in my life, at least. So I use that to measure my own level of spiritual enlightenment. And if I'm cheerful, then I can clean up the cat stand. I can do the dishes. I can come and speak to you on a Sunday morning. Whatever it is that is before me to do. I cheer myself up. For me, getting cheerful really amounts to the two words that Donna mentioned in her meditation this morning. Thank you. Immediately when I speak thank you, I begin to cheer up, especially if I say thank you even before anything good happens. You know, Jesus did that. He said thank you after the fact, but a lot of times he said thank you first. Start from up. Start from thank you. And that begins the process of lightening the load, of cheering me up. Say thank you when you are doing the everyday tasks that you're doing. Say thank you so that when the big challenge comes your way, the overwhelming challenge, you are in a state of cheerfulness, you are in a state of enlightenment, and that burden is lighter for you. So, I invite you to leave here today lighter, levitating, loving, so that you can go home and chop wood and carry water. God bless you. Thank you.